Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Barr on Stardish Radio.
Hi, this is Katie McLean, and I'm on Stardish Radio.
This is Jill Larson on Stardish Radio. Tune in and stay tuned. You never know who will drop by.
Hey, this is Sydney Penny, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. Stay tuned.
Just in case you didn't know, you are listening to Stardish Radio, if they didn't tell you enough times. Mm-hmm. I really have to edit that out. Welcome back, everybody. Today is the 16th of June. I'm your host, Joanne. Don't be shy, guys. Call in 347-945-5423. Immediately following this show, I want you guys to go head over to Brandon's Buzz on Blog Talk Radio, as Brandon will be having an in-depth soap chat with soap journalist Michael Fairman. Brandon is actually on the line. Hello there, buddy.
Hey, Joanne. How you doing?
I am so excited.
Me too. It's been so long since I've been on the show. It feels like it's been years since I've spoken with you.
You want to know? That's exactly how I feel. That's so true.
We chat online all the time, but I take it for granted that we haven't actually spoken in months.
I know. It's hysterical. let me give you guys a little rundown of the schedule. I'm sure some of you came over from Buzzworthy Radio listening to Billy Miller from Young and the Restless. He'll actually be with me tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, so make sure you come back for that. Then on the 19th, comedian Paul Ryan, he's done a ton of stuff, but I think right now what he's most famous for is from Desperate Housewives. He played a guy named Bruce who had way too much plastic surgery, so come back for that. Then next week I have Joe, and I'm going to butcher his name, I know it, Manganiello from One Tree Hill on the 22nd. Then on the 25th, Judge Lynn Toler from Divorce Court is going to be spending some time with me and taking calls from fans. She's going to be giving out marital advice. She's going to give out some financial advice, and it's going to be a really cool show. I'm excited to have her on. But in the meantime, I'm more excited right now because this lady that's coming on the show, who knew when we first laid grateful eyes on the remarkably pregnant, spunky spitfire Harley Davidson Cooper in the late 80s, heyday of Guiding Light, that we were indeed witnessing the birth of a modern soap superstar. She was the utter antithesis of the typical daytime heroine, but it didn't matter. Over the course of two decades, not to mention five well-earned Emmy nominations, we fell madly in love with her as she traveled through her life not letting anything, not lying spouses, not meddling parents, not even her own ferocious, stubborn streak get the best of her. Last year, hungry for a change in her life, she accepted the groundbreaking role of a disenchanted soldier on All My Children, and though she and the show's powers that be have struggled in search of this new character's true voice, this summer promises to be a hot one for both Lieutenant Taylor Thompson and the magnificent actress who portrays her. Please give a warm Stardish Radio welcome to the extraordinary and terrific Beth Ehlers. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
How are you, honey?
After that introduction, I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I have to give the credit to the introduction to my special co-host tonight, Brandon. Just called in. Brandon has another show here on Blog Talk Radio. So, Brandon, say hi and take credit for your intro.
Hey, Beth, how are you? My name is Brandon. I've been a big fan of yours for a long time.
Oh, Brandon, thank you. I'm so touched by what you wrote. Thank you.
The pleasure was all mine, believe me.
All right, so let's get down to brass knuckles. So for just about, you know, half of your life, you portrayed Harley. Why don't you start off with a little subject of the cancellation of Guiding Light? Your honest opinion and thoughts about the cancellation, it's got to be real bittersweet for you.
Yes, you know, it's funny how I came on that show and they were celebrating their 50th, and then we celebrated the 70th and then the demise, you know, and then I was there for pretty much a round number of 20 years. There was just there's something very neat and tidy about that whole journey for me with that show. And I'm so proud that I was able to be on for those last 20 years and hopefully help prop it up, you know, a little bit. It is sad. It's terribly sad. I don't know why. I'm not sure. I feel like a lot of this TV stuff with shows getting canceled and shows not having the big numbers, and how are we determining all this? We're using Nielsen ratings, you know? I don't get recognized any less than I ever got recognized. So it's hard for me to believe that that many less people are watching these shows. I think they're watching them on their DVRs and their TiVos, and we don't check those numbers. I get recognized as much as I ever did. And people don't think to me, oh, I used to watch that show. People watch. They're watching these shows. So it's a
shame. And people are watching on their cell phones now and their iPods and their computers, and it's crazy all the different new media that are showing not only soaps but all the television shows.
Yes, I agree. And they don't know how to keep up with it, and I think sometimes in their efforts to try to, I don't know, stop some, you know, this unbelievable tide, they end up cutting off their nose to spite their face. For example, changing the whole look of that show. That was tough for a lot of people. You know, I went into that, and I embraced it for Ellen, and I said, I'm not going to judge this. Let me see what she's doing. And you know, she started it pretty thin, and she started padding it as she needed to. But I don't think you can change the whole look of a show like that and have an audience be okay with it. It's not a new show. It's been on, and you're changing the look of it. That's kind of strange. That's hard to absorb.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, too, that they're trying to – I don't think it's so much that they know that people are watching. I think they're just looking for a cheaper way out. Reality television is cheaper, and it's easier, I think. And I think that's their pretty much all the networks' cop-outs right now.
Yeah, and sometimes reality television really sucks, and sometimes it's kind of good.
Yeah,
there's some good stuff there.
There is. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's certain things that I like, but there's a lot of trash TV, and it's definitely cheaper. And I did a lot of talking about this week, these stupid Heidi people, Spidey people, whatever you want to call them, well, for that I Want to Be a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here show. I mean, things like that to me are just a waste of network money. And when you could be spending it in more useful places.
And there's something really kind of sad about that, you know? I don't know why those people go on those shows. Don't you feel a little bit embarrassed about being called? You're kind of being called like a has-been, and I don't know, I would be embarrassed to do that.
Just
I feel like people would be
bit.
Laughing at me, not with me. Please don't laugh
exactly.
at me.
This is so true. Brandon, did you want to get some guiding light questions in before you had to go?
You know, I just really have one, and you know, it's you're one of those remarkably few actors who can create chemistry with literally everybody you work with, and not just your romantic partners, even though you clicked brilliantly with all your romantic partners, but even your friends and family like Justin Dees and Frank DeCopolis and Laura Wright. And I'm wondering if is it hard work for you to come into a new relationship or a new pairing and create that chemistry, or is it something that comes naturally to you?
No, anytime I work with a new energy, it's a little bit bumpy for me initially because it's like a soup, you know, and I'm making this soup. I'm making
Absolutely.
This character, and I got to figure out who all of these people are in relation to this character and what feelings they evoke in her. You know, that's I really do put that much thought into it. With Harley, you know, she was a different person depending on who she was with. She was her father made her a different person. He brought out all that anger from her childhood all the time. He would make her so mad that he left. And with her brother, she was a squishy little defiant 9-year-old. And she never grew past 9 with Frank, you know. And with Gus, obviously, she was sexy and confident and sassy. And, you know, people bring out different things in us. And when you're and my process is that I heighten them a little bit so that it's more apparent to an audience when she works with different people. But, yes, definitely it is a little bit of work for me every time I'm paired up with somebody new, male or female, and I want to find the right place for that person in their life, and I don't ever want to take away from what that person is doing either. I don't need to overshadow them. I need us to complement one another.
Absolutely. You know, it's probably not a fair question, but do you have a favorite scene or a favorite partner from those 20 glorious years of your tenure on Guiding Light?
I know it's going to sound just really cliche, but it is Ricky. It is Ricky. We just fit together. We were like peanut butter and jelly, and that was bumpy when we first started working together because we had such different processes. But once we figured out who we were and we saw that, wow, these processes can actually work really, really well together, and we can bring out things in the characters because of our own personalities. It just flowed. It just, from the moment it clicked for us and we understood it, it was like riding a bike. It really was, oh, I get it. Oh, I get it. I get who these two are. And then it was just, we just took off.
Wow. Must be a great feeling to be in the trenches and just kind of know immediately.
Yes, yes. It's gratifying because when they hand you a story, you want it to work. And you want, I don't know, I want that feeling each time they tell me that I'm going to do something or each time they lay it out. It's like a little puzzle for me, you know? And when I figure it out, I feel proud that I'm able to make it work.
Well, I tell you what, I think you're absolutely terrific, and I'm really rooting for you on All My Children because
you're
a magnificent actress, and you're a treasure for the daytime scene. You really are.
Oh, thank you. I so appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, you taking off, Brandon?
Yes, I am. I got a show to prepare for in about 50 minutes, so I've got some last-minute things to do. But thank you very much for letting me participate.
Oh, it was a pleasure
absolutely.
To meet you.
Same here. Same here.
All right, I'll see you at 11, Brandon.
Take care.
All right. Brandon hosts another show, and he's doing a soap chat with Michael Fairman, another soap journalist. So he just wanted to stop by and pay homage to the great Bess.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
So tell me, there were a lot of rumors that you were going to come on to All My Children as Liza, as everybody knows. And as I said and made very clear to everybody and their mother, I thought it was a great recast if that's what would have happened. Not to take anything away from Jamie. She's a great actress. But tell me how Taylor came to you.
When I first started speaking with different shows, not just ABC, but other networks and other shows about the possibility of making a jump from Guiding Light, I wanted to see where the holes were in the shows and see if what I do could fill that hole. You know, I didn't want to just get a job and then they didn't know what to do with me. And isn't it funny? I think that's what happened anyway. But I wanted to make a really wise, you know, leap. And one of the writers at All My Children came up with the idea of Liza, of recasting Liza. And now I had watched All My Children back in the day. Who didn't?
Right.
And I remember taking in a sharp breath and going, wow, Liza, because she's so complicated. She's such a wonderfully complicated character. So fun. But, you know, as I processed that character, there are inherent things that are positive and negative about stepping into a role like that. You have a built-in history. You know, you have a built-in family. You have a built-in storyline. You have all that stuff. But at the same time, the opposite of that is that you have all this history,
right.
And you're limited by that history. You know, there'd be love stories I wouldn't be able to play. When you play somebody new, it's a white piece of paper. You can do whatever you would like, and that's a little scary because you don't have family already there, and you don't have reasons to stay in town. You know, but when they made the decision to not move forward with Liza and talk to me about Taylor, I said, okay, let's do it. If that's what the writer is interested in, I'll support that. And I liked his passion about the military, about the war, about playing a woman over there. You know, I did all my research. I read a bunch of books and talked to the people in the military, and I was excited about it. I think, I don't know what happened. I don't know why I wasn't in the room. You know, Chuck's in California. He's not in New York, so I don't get to communicate with him the way you would like to communicate with your writer. So I don't know what happened and how it didn't pan out. Maybe he had too many things that he was trying to create all at once, too many characters. People were coming and going. Alicia left. She took her break, and they had to fill that. And there was a lot going on in that show for a long time. It needed the show needs to calm down. And so perhaps right now is a good time for me to be, you know, I've had a little break. I've taken a breath, and now maybe they can move her forward a little bit.
Right. So where is Taylor supposed to be? I mean, because you haven't been on the screen in a long time. I forgot the last time I saw you on the screen.
Yeah.
Where is she supposed to be?
Yeah, that was a very long 7 weeks for me of, you know, calling the network and saying, so I haven't lost my job, right?
Yeah, right.
Because I have two kids and a mortgage here, you know, beyond anything else. I'm a working single mother, so I need a job.
Right.
What they would say to me is, we're fixing it. We're fixing it. And I took them at their word. I think, you know, Frankie was injured. I think Brat and I were just kind of getting to know each other and maybe realizing that it wasn't working out the way that they had hoped. Unfortunately, it's very tough when you do all this stuff off camera.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, they show Brat, you know, with Frankie over there after he got injured, and you're like, all right, well, where's his other half?
Yeah.
Where did she go?
Yeah.
You know, that was his lieutenant. Why isn't she there? You know, so it's kind of like there's a missing piece there somewhere.
Chuck's been writing in a different medium for a while. Chuck's been doing prime time, which is one episode a week, and he's been doing a different genre entirely.
Right.
He has not been writing soap opera. He's been writing camp, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole different kind of thing. You don't have to commit to history. You don't have to commit to the gravitas in a situation when you write camp. Camp's all making fun of stuff. It's all broad comedy stuff. And so maybe he needed to be reminded that soap audiences don't take kindly to you messing with history, and even if you can't see the seriousness of a situation, they see it, and they want you to write it.
Absolutely.
And they want you to write it seriously. You're asking
absolutely.
Them to trust you, and soap audiences are very generous, and they're very loose about a lot of things. They'll forgive you. They'll forgive you as long as they know you're taking it seriously and you're trying. It's when
right.
they feel like they're being, pardon me, fucked with, that they get pissed off.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's true. And you would think that he would even know a little bit more about it because he did write for General Hospital. But then again, when you look at General Hospital and the state that shows in, that's a whole other story.
Well, you know, there is an argument to be made that Chuck Pratt and Bob Guza actually write really well together.
Yeah, well, maybe they should be together.
Yeah, maybe that magic was there when the two of them were together. I don't know enough about that. I've spoken to some people who do work over there, and they feel that way. Those people feel
right.
that, you know, they were a great combination together, and maybe they, you know, they complement each other in that way. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, I think he's clearly a talented writer, you know, and I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has a good resume, and, you know, I hope the show can find its way back on track because it, the conversation that I had with the network about the character that I wanted to play and what they wanted me to do was somebody who was very earthy and real, and because the show had gotten to a point where it was sort of homogenized and everybody was rich. Everybody's rich, everybody was beautiful, everybody was, you know, untouchable, and I think they
right.
wanted to bring it back down to having some more, deeply rooted family people, bringing the Martins back to the forefront, bringing back, you know, Jesse
right.
and Angie, and some heart, getting some heart back on the camera.
Yeah, well, they tried to do all that, but then it kind of got lost again, you know. So it's like, all right, you brought all these fan favorites back, and you're trying to bring it back to a certain thing, but it kind of. I don't know. It got lost in a blender somewhere. I don't know,
I know
what happened because I read when he first came on that he was talking about how he wanted to change Fusion and the Fusion women and turn them into business women instead of these women that are running around chasing these men's tails. And where's Fusion? It got blown up or something. I don't know. Where'd it go? Nobody has jobs anymore, you know? So
I got very confused when once they brought Tamara and Eden back on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were gay, and then they weren't gay. I got a little bit confused. I
guess
that, you know, I didn't know what happened there.
Because when Eden first came out in her storyline years and years and years ago, that was like a groundbreaking thing, and they kind of tried to mess with that too many times, and you can't. You know, it was such a an advance, I think, for All My Children, and, you know, put kind of Erica Kane in her place. You know, yeah, your daughter is gay. Hello.
Yeah.
She's not going to be with some Adonis, and she's going to be with a goddess, you know, but they try to kind of change that, and I don't know. They lost it all somewhere, but I really hope they put it back on track.
Again, paying, you know, with respect to history. How do you, you know? Don't mess with that. People take that really personally. You asked them however many years ago to believe that and to love her and to accept it, and then you're years later going to say, ah, we're just kidding. She's not really gay, you know, or her being gay is not important or whatever. You're denigrating it.
Right, exactly, exactly. I completely agree with you. All right, let's there were some fan things that came across the wires when you were coming to All My Children and Ricky Paul was already on, and they were like, oh, God, they're not going to force, you know, Gush on us. You know, they can't keep forcing super couples on a new soap, you know, so what's going to happen with that? And they tried to do it with Jake and Taylor, and, you know, it didn't work as, you know, whatever they did. They splitches up because of Brat. And how did you feel about all that? Did you want to come on? When you came on All My Children, did you want to be paired with Ricky, or did you, as a love interest, or were you more excited to expand and play with the rest of the guys on the show?
There's some cutie pies in that show. I wanted to work immediately. It was always Michael for me was the one that I said, wow, that would be a great coupling. I thought he and I would work well together, but Torsten too. But I'm not getting in the middle of him and Kendall. I'll get stoned to death. But I just really liked Kendall. I just really liked Torsten and wanted to work with him. Now, I didn't necessarily, Ricky and I we've been doing this long enough to know that if it was our show, we would be resentful, you know,
right,
of people coming in and thinking that they're going to take over the show. People
right.
being written when they haven't earned their place yet.
Right.
So, no, we never thought we would come on and just be like, dun-dun-dun-dun, we're here to save the day.
Right.
And we knew that we would have to, in order for the audience to want us to get together, they would have to see us with other people first. But have that feeling of, but didn't they used to like each other? Remember they flirted with each other, and there's always that hope that two people maybe are going to find their way back. I think that was more our idea of it. And in some ways, I think they accidentally did that. However it was that they ended up telling that story and then backing off from it and then my going to Brat, I think it gave people a little bit of a taste of Jake and Taylor and maybe something they can go back to later on. But, no, I think we both wanted to explore working with other people. Toward the end of our time at Guiding Light, we were really happy they broke us up. We weren't happy with the way they broke us up and kept us apart. The audience the audience will happily let you break up if they know you're going to find your way back to one another eventually. It's not like he and I were breaking up left and right. This was really the first time we'd ever broken up. So they wanted to see us fall in love again. It wasn't the 15th time over a decade that you'd seen these two do this.
Right.
I think they owed it to the audience, and instead they put us in two separate triangles, which was strange. So we were very happy to not work together initially. But I do feel like if I were to get paired with Michael Knight, you know, that is his brother, and that is an obvious triangle. That's an obvious great triangle. And
Absolutely.
Some shows now, they run away from the audience. They go, no, the audience is going to expect that. We'll give them something else. No, sometimes the audience gets really mad when you don't give them. They like to be right. They want to guess it. It's like going to a movie and going, I knew it, you know?
Yeah.
They want to, like, they know when they go to a love story with Hugh Grant and Sandra Bullock, they know they're getting together at the end of the movie. They know it. They just want to see the journey. So they're happy to say, oh, my God, a triangle between Jake and Taylor. And, you know, yeah, it's obvious. Well, tell the story. They'll still watch. They just want to see the great story that you're going to tell.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'll tell you, Michael Knight speaks extremely highly of you. We were on a cruise, Rock the Soap cruise, back in March, and we had a nice, candid discussion about you coming on the show, and he was really hoping that when you came on that he would be able to get to work with you.
Aww.
And he really, really did adore you. And now what we're seeing is that's a possibility that's coming up. The rumors are that you guys are going to have some kind of thing going on. And if that's the truth, then I really hope so. I try not to read spoilers because I want to you know, watch it in the moment. I don't like hearing the rumors and stuff like that. I mean, certain things I have to know, but, you know, I try and know as little as I have to. So if you and Michael are going to be working together, I think that's going to be fantastic. And with Amanda going to be leaving the campus eventually, there's always that thing
where... I know,
where,
that frees up Jake. I know. That would free up Jake to come into a triangle.
Exactly.
I know. You know, back in the day, you got called into your executive producer's office, and they laid out the story for you. Now, we know nothing. We know nothing
really
beyond the next script that we get. And unfortunately, it forces the actor to not commit 100% to anything because you don't know what's coming the next week. And then, you know, you've played something out, full out, and then you get another script, and you go, oh, shit, I didn't know you were going in that direction.
Right,
now I look
like
a jerk. And they do that to us. And so now we are forced a lot of times to hedge our performances simply because the network and the writers, they won't share with us anymore what the story is, which is, A, really condescending,
mm-hmm.
if I can say. And
yeah.
It makes it difficult for you to do your job as well as you would like to do it.
Right. Well, I have a question from Brandy in the chat room. Let me get back up there. Brandy, where'd you go? I got a new chat room, and it's really awkward. How did Beth feel about having another former GLer coming on the show, Stephanie Gatchett, and is she going to have any scenes with Steph?
Stephanie, I know, has been in the building. Everybody keeps saying to me, have you seen Stephanie? Have you seen Stephanie? I've not actually worked with Stephanie or even been in on a day that she's been in.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to see Stephanie. I love Stephanie. But Stephanie's, you know, that's a whole different generation. We didn't really cross over a lot. Even when she was on Guiding Light, she was Laura's daughter. Cassie's daughter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she was always kind of the little girl to me. I understand she's a grown-up girl now, so I just in a personal sense would like to see Stephanie because I haven't seen her in a few years now. And, you know, she was out in L.A. and she tried a little hand at that, and it'd be nice to just catch up with her.
Yeah. Well, there's your question, Brandy. And you know what? Before I go to the phones, what do you want to see for Taylor?
I want to see Taylor get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Taylor get family. You know, if I had to pluck someone from Guiding Light, because there's going to be all those unemployed actors, this person that I would pluck is purely because I think because I love him, but also because I think he would fit best in as a family member for me. I would like them to pluck Danny Cosgrove and have him come over as my brother.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I need family. And he's a dynamite actor, and he needs a job, and he's got four kids, and and he's a dynamite actor.
Really have four kids?
He's got four kids. He's Irish. You know those Irish.
Oh, gosh.
He's got four kids.
He's a baby face. I can't even look at him like that.
I know. And he's just the sweetest thing. He is just a love bug. And we worked briefly at Guiding Light, where when mm-hmm. I was vulnerable and I was going to go to prison, and he was like my best friend, and he left soon after that. But we had some great scenes together, and I loved working with him. We enjoyed each other. So if I had to pick somebody to come over, that would be it. But that's what I would like to see. I need to start fleshing her out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she needs friends. I love Denise is my friend. Wait, I have to give their character names. I'm so bad that way. Randy
mm-hmm.
and Amanda, I'm kind of starting to work with Chriselle more. And I worked with Chriselle when I first came, so I'm happy about that. Chriselle is like the loveliest person. She's so nice.
Yes, she was on another show last night, and she was talking. We told her that you were coming on my show tonight, and she was like, oh, my God.
She's so nice.
She loves you to death. She had nothing but, of course, nice things to say.
They're a nice cast over there. They're really, you know, they've just been really welcoming and, you know, that's how I like to work. I feel like it's a big show and there's room for everybody and let's all get along. That's how
I
feel.
That's silly saying. Can't we all just get along?
Because you hear those nightmares about other shows and you're like, ooh, man, I don't know if I could work in that environment. I don't know if I could work in that environment where it's really competitive and people are stabbing each other in the back. And that doesn't happen. I don't want to limit that to television. That doesn't just happen to television. That's law firms. That's schools.
Everywhere.
That happens everywhere. But I don't want to work in it. I don't want to work in that environment.
Right.
That would be very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm. I've quit many of jobs because
yeah.
of that. So I can totally agree with you on
I
that
have friends
one.
You have, too. Yeah, I hate my boss. Yeah. I can't work here. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Well, in any event, I'm rooting for you also, and I really hope they do the right thing. Do you have a fan club?
I don't. I mean, I don't. I don't have a fan club. I'm actually a very, very private person.
Okay.
I remember Laura Wright once said to me, she goes, I don't know how it is. You have no fan club. You never attend any events. You don't know anybody. You don't watch any shows. And you're like one of the most popular people in Daytime. And I took that as a huge compliment. She's my girlfriend, so she would say that to me. But I just have never, I'm very private that way. I'm very, very private that way. And I also don't want to, I don't know, I don't understand how you would have a fan club. It seems to me a lot of these fan clubs, I don't know, you have to pay money to belong, and then what, do they sell you T-shirts? I don't want to exploit the fan base to do that kind of stuff. I wouldn't even know how to have one and run it. And what would it be about? Love me? Here's my fan club. Love me. I feel very awkward about that.
My disciples, pay me $40 a year and you'll get a signed autograph.
Yeah. If somebody could come up with something that was meaningful, like a charity or, I don't know, something where the money would go towards something, I would be interested in that. But I can't just have, like, a thing that's about loving me. That's so self-serving. And I have a whole problem with the whole celebrity and... You know, I'm always trying to reconcile what I do for a living and the fact that it's on TV, and I don't want to validate myself based upon this kind of stuff, you know. But I also don't want to I don't want to disrespect the fans and how much it means to them, these shows and these characters, because I appreciate so much their feeling about it. And because for me, acting and these characters, this is about their lives, you know. This is about the human experience and my trying to tell these stories of these people, so their input is so important to me. I'm always trying to reconcile that stuff. It's a funny thing, celebrity, you know?
Well, then I'm going to make a suggestion, and you could tell Michael Knight this also, because Michael, I said the same thing to him, and he's like, oh, I'll just tag along at everybody else's events. I can't, you know, do stuff like that and blah, blah. You two should have an event together and do a charity event, because you two are exactly on the same page. Michael's the same way. I mean, although in his latter years, he has definitely gotten more open to doing some fan events, definitely got him to go on Rock the Soap, and he committed to coming back next year for Rock the Soap. It's a three-day cruise out to Mexico, and, you know, it's just like a cruise ship full of, not the whole cruise ship, but it's, you know, fan-based, and it's just a great time, great, great time. But you two should do an event together, because you are right on point with each other as far as the fan clubs and all that other stuff, and do a charity event. I really believe that.
I would be very happy to do something like that. I have to feel like, there's a larger message there than love me in this whole universe. If you have to love anything, love me. Like, I just can't stomach that.
Brandon is actually in the chat room, and he's a huge, huge fan of Laura Wright. I mean, huge, huge, huge fan of hers. And he said, can you ask Beth to give me one good Laura Wright story? So do you have anything?
Only one?
Well, I mean, we'd have to extend this show for another hour. I mean, if I asked all the questions that everybody else wanted. But let's do, if you could pick one really good story.
Oh, my gosh.
Good LW story.
Now, I have to tell you, now, Laura is she's my girlfriend. We had our kids together. You know, when we were first on Guiding Light together, it was me and her and Amy Eklund. You wouldn't know this, but she was a girl, she was a deaf girl, who was the most incredible lip reader you've ever met in your life. And Amy, we're all married, none of us had kids, and we would go out and get drunk, and it was so funny with Amy, because as she got drunker and we all got drunker, she couldn't read lips anymore. Anyway, but that, it was like the three of us were buddies, and then we had kids together. I have so many memories of Laura, but a lot of them are in our backyards with our children, and Laura's just a good time. Laura is one of those people who is she lives her life with abandon. That's the best way I can describe her and her husband. They are always ready to do anything. They're curious about everything. They move at the drop of a hat. Hey, now we want to have a vineyard, and they do it. Hey, we're going to grow, we're going to have a bee colony. We're going to raise pigs. Like, and they just do it. And I have always admired that about Laura. When I first had my kids, I was very, you know, they have to be in bed at a certain time. And Laura's like, screw it. The kids would be up till 1 o'clock in the morning. She just was, and not irresponsible about it at all, just very open and loving and easy and mellow, and it was all good. Like, that would be the way I'd describe her. It's all good. It's all good. That's Laura. And I think I just always admired that about her and John. They're such a nice match. And she's just a blast. Every time I see her at the Emmys, we text each other. A lot of times she'll be driving into General Hospital and we'll be texting each other or talking on the phone, because that's like the only time, you know. You don't have a lot of time when you have kids. You just,
right.
You lose.
Oh, I know. I got two. I know. I have a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I'm a single mom too, so I know. There is not a lot of time for a lot.
There's not. There's not a lot of time, and your friends do come, they start to come in and out of your life, you know, and you realize, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, 2 years have passed, and I haven't spent significant time with this person.
Right.
But, yeah, she's, you know, I broke my arm up at Laura's house, and she, that's a good story. I broke my arm. We were playing baseball, and I was sliding into home, and I broke my arm. And the second I picked it up, I knew it was broken. And Laura and her friend came with me to the hospital. While I was getting my x-rays, they ran out to the bar. They're drinking, getting drunk at the bar, coming back to the hotel to sit with me while we waited. I mean, to the hospital to sit with me while I had to go into surgery with this broken arm. And there's Laura, and I'm high on morphine, and she's drunk. And it was...
Oh, my
That's
God.
My good Laura Wright story.
And I could see that, too. I had the opportunity to meet her at Super Soap Weekend last year. I did, as they call it, a red carpet interview in one of the restaurants there. And you just get that feeling from her. And she was just very down to earth and very sweet. And she's definitely like one of those girls that you would want to just have as a friend.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a very easy friend, and we're very different people. And I think, again, going back to that idea of complimenting one another, we always tended to bring out, I think, the best in each other as people. There were things about her I absolutely admired, and I think things that she admired about me, and we just liked each other that way. And our friendship on the show was a very comfortable, easy friendship. We liked working together. It was we looked forward to our scenes that we would have together. You know, she was.
Mm-hmm.
I missed her, and when she left as Cassie, and no. Disrespect meant to Nicole at all, but I never was able to accept somebody else in that role. Laura to
right.
me was Cassie. There wasn't anybody else, and she just embodied that girl.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we could go on all night about Laura, but you know what? I got people on the phone that want to talk to Beth. Laura's going to have to come on, so you're going to have to chat me up to your girl. We're going to go over to area code 609, New Jersey. You're on the phone with the fabulous Beth Ehlers. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Eileen.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi, Beth. How are you? I don't know what else to say. I mean, I think everybody else has said, but anyway, I've been watching you since the first day on Guiding Light. You're absolutely fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
And yes, Beth, you do have a fan group. You have a group of people that got together when you were with Philip, and they are great women. They're intelligent.
Well, give me some names. I probably know some of their names.
Oh, you probably know Virginia.
Oh, Virginia Cagle. Yeah.
Yes. She's great. And there's a girl named Laura, and there's a girl named Trish, and Becca, and Liz. And Annie, they're a bunch of great women.
They are. They are great.
And we all stuck together, and we all talked about, you know, what was going to happen. And then when you left Guiding Light, and then you became all my children. So you do have a group.
Well, it's not a formal fan club. Yeah, you're not a formal fan group. But I always note your letters, and I see your names in the corners. And I know you guys are separate from other people. And how that came about was that Virginia would write me these letters, and they were so dead on. Perceptive about.
Oh my God, she's so smart.
She's really. Smart. I mean, they should go to her and confer with her about the direction the show should go in. She's
we could
amazing.
Write all my children. We could
and
write
so
all
I ended
children.
Up like writing her a letter.
Her.
She's amazing.
I know, but we really love you. I mean,
oh,
we really do. I mean, you're an exceptional actress. I mean, exceptional beyond belief. But I just want to ask you one question about all my children. Where is Taylor going? Do you have any idea?
I feel like they're like, well, we don't know what job she should have. Could you just make me a waitress at the casino? It's not hard.
Do something.
When people come into town, you know, they're waitresses, they're waiters. What other job are you going to get? And then you open me up to being able to have conversations with everybody who goes in and out of the bar and the casino. I don't think that's terribly difficult. And again, I like Taylor as opposed to Liza because she was earthy and real and, you know, she was going to be able to bring that aspect to the show. So let's keep that going, you know, the fact that she's not close to her family. We touched on the fact that there are problems maybe with her dad and her brothers and her being the only girl in this macho household of soldiers. And, you know, I want to go exploring all that stuff with her. I had said, I don't know if you heard when I said to Joanne, I would love them to bring on a brother for me. I'd like him to pluck Danny Cosgrove. I think he and I'd be dynamite as a brother-sister.
Well, I absolutely, you can imagine. He's great.
He's wonderful.
Fabulous.
And,
he's terrific. I mean,
and he's handsome,
I mean,
and he'd be great at All My Children. He'd be great.
He would be great. He would be terrific. But who would you like to be related to? If you had to pick somebody to be related to, who would
somebody
you
currently
to?
On the show, I'd like to be
yes.
Crystal's sister.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to be Bobby Eakes' sister.
I can see that.
You know,
I can see that.
Yeah, I think that makes
you're
the
too
most
alienated.
Sense.
You're too alienated. Taylor's
yes.
too alienated. And you put you with a character who is alienated also. So, I mean, you were too new characters that had no connections.
Yeah, it was very odd. It was almost like he was writing us on our own whole little show. And
right.
as many times as I would, you know, try to casually go into my boss's office and say, you're going to start integrating me, right? Because you can't. It's a funny thing. When you've been doing this as long as I've been doing it, you know how it's supposed to be done. But you can't tell your bosses that because it's like any other job in the world. You can't know more than your boss because they hate you for it. And so you have to be careful when you go in that you don't tell somebody how to do their job.
Right.
And but I wanted to scream at people. I really wanted to go in and go, hello, you're burying me here. You're
yeah,
killing it. You're
right.
making this really hard. First you give me somebody who, God bless him, I love JR, but he's not an actor. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, that's hard enough with somebody who's, it's going to be a long time before he gets out of second gear.
Right.
And so I'm having to constantly hedge my performance because I can't be doing, you know, Shakespeare while he's doing something else. And so that was hard enough. And then you give me no
Can
else
I interject
to
here?
With.
You did a great job there because any other actress that has your resume and came on with somebody new and made him, I mean, he was great. And, I mean, you are a generous performer, Beth.
Oh, thank
you.
You
are come on, you're generous.
I
never
don't
take
mind
over.
That kind of stuff.
You've always been that way, but you, some other actress, come on, some other diva from some other show would not have been as generous. You were generous. You
thank
are very
you.
I'm generous
I'm not going
actress.
To argue that. I'm not
you are. You are a very generous actress. You truly are, and no one could have sold that, and no one sells stories like you do.
Oh,
and that's
thank
all I'm
going to
say. And Brandon said it best. You sell story. You know how to sell a story. I've watched you since 1987, your first day, and you can sell a story.
Thank you. You know, I try to see the larger picture a lot of times because your ego can sometimes get the better of you, and you do want to at times say, do you know who I am? But
yeah,
you
well,
can't,
we,
and that goes
yeah.
nowhere. It goes nowhere, and it doesn't mean
right.
anything.
Right,
and
exactly.
And you have to believe that ultimately at the end of the day, staying true to your character and doing a good job will be much more effective than trying to bully your way into getting what you want, you know?
Right.
You can't operate that way. There's a lot of people, they're thinking about a lot of different things. As much as Taylor is my complete focus, she's not their complete focus. And
right.
she's not the audience's complete focus. And
right.
so, you know.
She needs some focus.
She yes, and hopefully they're going to, yeah, hopefully they know that it was a little bit of a sloppy bring on. But, you know, I said also to Joanne, it may have, by accident, it may have allowed the audience time to absorb me. It's been
exactly.
a nice, slow year of getting used
right.
to this girl and maybe rooting for her a little bit, hopefully, and saying, hey, could we see just a little more of her and what's going to happen with her? And maybe that is ultimately, by accident, the best way to have brought her on.
I agree.
Right.
Instead of, like
I
you
agree.
Say, ramming her down people's throats. Nobody wants that. I didn't want to do that either.
Right. Right. Well,
hopefully they're
great.
Curious about her, you know.
Well, thanks for coming on, Beth.
Thank you.
It was great. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Take care and good luck.
Tell everybody I said
you.
Hi.
I will. Oh, I will. Don't worry.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. I know this next caller is very eager to speak to you. This is Brandy, and she's a very huge fan, Beth. She was actually extremely nervous to call in. So, Brandy,
aww,
say hi to Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Brandy.
Hi. I'm a big fan. I've watched you on Guiding Light, and then, you know, I was watching all my children, and you came on, and I was like, oh, my God, yes, I love Beth.
Oh, thank you.
You're awesome. Like, I had met you before at an event at Blondie's, and I was at your event that you had in September.
Oh, good.
With you and Ricky. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was there. You guys did an awesome job. I loved it. It was, like, awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted an opportunity just to say goodbye to everybody because I don't know how you do that, you know, and that was really emotional for me. That was hard. I cried at the end of that day because it was so closing the chapter of that book, that last chapter of that book, and that saying goodbye to all of you just made it so final for me.
I know. I was crying too. I was like, but you know, I know I will eventually, you know, see you again, hopefully at another event or something. Yeah. I saw Ricky. I like, of course I'll go wherever you guys are. If you're at an event, I will definitely go and say hi, and cuz you guys are awesome. I'm such a like nervous idiot right now. Thanks, Joanne.
Well, Brandy, you know me. I'm the one that puts you on the spot, you know. I can do that.
I know. I'm usually more composed, but...
Well, don't be nervous, because we've already met each other in person, so...
Exactly.
But see, I wasn't nervous at that point because I had a few drinks.
She had a little liquid courage.
just a little bit, yeah. Yeah, but I'll try not to be so idiot next time. But you're doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
I can't wait. I was the one that said stuff about Stephanie earlier that Joanne had asked you about. And I find that so funny because I was in New York last week and I happened to go by the studio and I saw Stephanie. I saw Stephanie and you didn't see her yet.
I know. I have not seen her.
Yeah, she told me what she was playing. But that would be awesome if you guys had a scene because... That'd be cool.
Know. Does she have a long-term contract? This show, as I've noticed, has a tendency to bring people on short-term.
Well, she said she was on recurring, and that day that I had spoke to her, they had told her something about they offered her a 13-week cycle.
Yeah.
Something like that, So I don't know if she's staying long, but that'd
did
be
she
awesome.
Say who she was playing, Brandy?
Yeah, she's playing Madison North. And she told me she was working with, like, Thorsten Kay.
Oh, she works. Oh, good. She gets Robert Thorsten.
The DA's wife. Okay,
yeah.
I remember seeing that now. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's who she told me, and she's working with the police, so obviously Darnell and stuff like that. That's who she told me.
Okay, cool.
But,
very cool.
She said she's a bitch, so I'm like, hey, that's opposite Tammy, whatever.
Oh, yeah, God. You know, she had to be, so, like, practically an angel to play Tammy. Tammy was so... You know, such a good girl. And so she must be thrilled to be playing a bad girl now.
Oh, yeah, that's what she told me. She's like, oh, Brandy, you're going to see me in a different side. I was like, whatever you want, girl, you do it.
Good.
I'm all for it. I'm support whatever you guys do. I love, you know, I love you guys. You guys, you know, I watch Guy and Light. You're my Guy and Light family, and now that's going off the show. But wherever you guys go, you know, I will be there supporting you.
Oh, thank you. Well, right now I'm just happy to see my friends starting to get work in other places. I'm sure it's out there that Crystal is going back to Dave.
She's about alive, so, yeah.
Thank goodness.
She put that on her Twitter.
Oh, my God. Does she Twitter?
Yes, she does.
I remember when Crystal didn't know how to text.
You see, you need to Twitter now, Beth. God, I got to get you set up.
I'm too private. I could never do something like that. I could never do Facebook. I could never... I would have nothing to say. Well, I'm picking up my kids. Who cares? I just put the chicken in the oven. I hope it doesn't burn. Like, who gives a crap? My life. Oh, my God.
My alarm is going off. Yes, I know. Oh, God. I could text that one. My smoke alarm's going off from the chicken in the oven.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Brandy, I'm glad you got the courage to call in, my girl.
Oh, thank you for putting me in.
Thanks,
Beth, Brandy. It's always a pleasure. You know, I love you. You're awesome.
Thank
keep
you, Brandy.
Keep rocking.
Thank you.
Okay. She's so sweet. I'll tell you, the first time I met Brandy was at Super Soap Weekend, and I
lost my pocketbook. I left it at one of the stands because I was there as like a member of the press. So we were running around like crazy, and I set my pocketbook down, and I made it from one end of MGM to the other. And when I went to go take out my wallet is when I realized I didn't have it. And she was at that end, and she went looking for it high and low. She was just the sweetest girl.
Oh.
And I found it. But anywho, we have some more people for you. Let's see. We have area code 312. This is Tony from Chicago. Tony, say hi to Beth.
Hello, Beth.
Hi, Tony. Wow, somebody from Chicago. Wow.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of yours. I've been a fan of yours for a long, long time, from the days of Guiding Light, now through all my children. It's just an amazing thing to see you on.
Wow, thank you. I didn't even realize that Guiding Light was that big in Chicago.
Yeah, it was. Because I was a fan. You got fans here in Chi-Town, you know, and everything else.
Wow.
But I was going to ask you about all my children questions, but if that's already been used up, you know. So I'm going to embarrass you a little bit.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to take you back to Guiding Light a couple of years ago. There's a promotion that you did for Marvel Comics when you see Harley had to be a superhero.
Yes.
Was that fun to do?
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite things. Marvel Comics approached Guiding Light. They picked Guiding Light.
Mm-hmm.
And then they picked me of all the characters on the show. They wanted her to be a superhero who was a mother and trying to balance motherhood. You know, the superhero stuff, it's all metaphor, and you know, and so I loved that idea of a super mom, you know, this guy
yeah.
like super mom. And so that episode, that was just so fun to play Harley kind of amplified. Harley with bigger hair and bigger breasts and more confidence, and, you know, she can leap tall buildings and she can beat up bad guys, you know, just with one punch and still get home to tuck her kids into bed at night. You know, I just like that whole idea of it.
Don't forget she lightning bolts through her fingers.
Yes, the lightning bolts through my fingers, and then she couldn't be near Gus, and would she give up the love of her life to do what's right for, you know, a mankind? It was so fun. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah,
wow,
I loved
cute.
It. I absolutely loved it, too. But, you know, in addition to what your soap operas need to do, but I also remember you from a movie just about 20 years ago that you did with one half of Two and a Half Men star, John Cryer, called Hiding Out.
Yes, Hiding Out, yes.
That was a great movie. I love that movie.
That thing's always on HBO.
It is, right? Yeah. And it's always on regular TV, too. But I really love that movie.
Yeah. My kids,
yeah.
It's funny, I look at that movie, and I look so much like my children, because obviously I was a child myself.
Right.
I was 18 when I did that. And I see, oh, my God, I look so much like my little kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
you were not the only one in that movie. I just went back and took a look at the cast list on that show. Not only you was in there with John Cryer, but also had Annabeth Gish.
Yes.
Was in this film too, and Joy Behar, one of the ladies
yes.
of you.
I know. I work across the hall from Joy, and Joy and I, we talk about that. And when I was on The View with JR, it just didn't seem like the appropriate time to bring that up because I wanted them to embarrass Joy and show Joy in her first movie appearance. But, you know, it was a little bit serious with JR and his injuries.
Right.
And so we didn't want to,
yeah.
you know, turn the spotlight onto something else.
Right.
Yeah, but
that
the next time, the next time you go on with Michael, you should embarrass her.
Oh, I would love it because we're in scenes together. And, you know, my God, we're both a lot younger. Well, we used to talk about that at the Emmys. One of the first times I ever saw her at the Emmys, I tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Hey, remember me?"
She probably did remember you.
She did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Beth, thanks so much for talking to me tonight. And continued success on all my children with Taylor, with the Taylor. I hope I can see you with Tad. Cause
that'll
be fun. Yeah, and say hi to my friends Denise and Chriselle for me.
I will. Denise is my good luck charm. I'm probably working with Chriselle on Monday, so I'll say hi to both of them.
Yeah, because I just got a picture from Denise today.
Denise is great.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, tell them I said hi, okay?
I will.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, thanks, Tony. That's cool.
That's cool to revisit that. That would have been funny as all hell to embarrass Joy like that, because, you know, she just loved giving it to people, and to have that come out. Another time.
Yeah, I heard she just got another talk show. She got her own show on, or her own hour on something. You would know more about this than I, but she got her own hour on cable TV, or I don't know, something like that. And I thought, wow, isn't 5 days a week on The View enough? Like, what more could you possibly have to talk about?
Well, because she just, to me, she just can't stop talking, and she loves talking politics. She's a big Twitterer, too. She's always on Twitter. She keeps her BlackBerry, if you ever, like, see the monologues of The View, she keeps her BlackBerry either between her legs or on the desk, and it's always going off.
Well, how does that work with Twitter? How do you access people? How would you be able to get on Joy's? How do you get on Joy's Twitter or whatever?
There's a search directory, and you just type in Joy Behar, and her name will come up and her picture. And Twitter has this cool thing where it says it's where they verify that that is actually the celebrity you are following. Because there's so many people, especially on Facebook, it's so easy to create a fake page, and a lot of people do that. So you don't know if you're really following, you know, Ricky Paul Golden or someone who just loves Ricky Paul Golden. You know, they don't, you know, hold you accountable and say, hey, if you're not him, you need to say this is just a fan thing. Whereas Twitter, if you are a celebrity, they have a certain thing that you go to, and underneath your name it says verified, okay, I am the celebrity. So then you just click on the button follow, and it says now you are following Joy Behar. It doesn't mean that she's following you, and she doesn't necessarily see everything that you put out there, but you would see everything that she puts out there. Sherry Shepherd and Elizabeth Hasselbeck do the same thing. Even Barbara Walters does it now.
I just, you know, I am a very, very old-fashioned person. I am like an old lady in a young girl's body.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that my head can wrap around that kind of way of life. You know, I can't live my life that way. And having said that, I realize that it is useless resistance. It is here. It is here.
Mm-hmm.
It is so far ahead of me already. Like I should be trying to catch up to it.
Right.
And instead of pretending like it's catching up to me.
Right.
But I don't know. I think my head is just not going to change in terms of things like that, like a Facebook. I'm proud of myself for texting. I text. Hey, I text. I'm not, I'm not a complete retard. but that's like it for me. And for me, texting is pretty much just got off the subway. I'll be home in 5 minutes. You know, like
right. Where this is more. See, Twitter, I think, was meant to be more of not a social network. It was originally meant to be like a real-time news information. You know, there's a lot of people on there like Anderson Cooper and CNN and E! Online. And so, if you want to know what's going on in the moment, real-time, you follow them and you'll get those stories instantaneously as they're happening. But I think the more popular it got, people just get on there and it's kind of like, oh, well, you know what? I was just in there getting my hair done, and I was Twittering that, you know, I wanted to have something to eat, and all of a sudden, you know, my personal trainer calls me and tells me, hey, you better not eat that, you know. So it's kind of like you're really putting a lot of stuff out there. I think people put more stuff out there than they really should.
This is what I think about stuff. I don't think we're supposed to know not just stuff about each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think even the news, I think even just the idea of knowing what's happening on the other side of the planet, it's a lot of stimulation. And while I say this, I read the New York Times voraciously every day. I read the New Yorker. I'm constantly on watching MSNBC. I think we overstimulate ourselves, and I don't think our brains can process all this stuff properly,
right,
which is why we are depressed and we don't sleep and we're anxiety-ridden and we overeat to try to fill holes. I mean, it's everything is just all too much. So if I can eliminate whatever stimulation I can eliminate, I try to eliminate that stuff.
Right.
Because I can see where that Twittering and stuff would get. I know when I'm texting somebody and we're going back and forth, like if Laura and I haven't talked to each other in a while, I'll realize, oh my God, like 45 minutes has gone by and I've filled an entire thing texting back and forth with this person. I need to break off of this. If I have that much to say, pick up the phone.
Exactly.
You know, and I feel like I need to put that phone down. I need to put all that media stuff down every once in a while and just clear your head of all that information.
Yeah. I have a Twitter account. Specifically, I signed it up for the show. I didn't understand it, but I figured, okay, this is a good way for me to put the show's name out there, and this way everybody knows what guests are coming on. If they want to listen, they can come by. I did the same thing with Facebook, and I started out with MySpace. The Twitter thing, most people, well, everybody, I guess I should say, maybe except with the exception of me, I don't get it sent to my phone. Everybody signs up for these instant text messages. So your phone is forever blowing up, and it's like, oh, this one just tweeted me. Oh, I don't really need to know all that, because I just kind of check it. Every once in a while, I'll go through and I'll say, oh, okay, this one said this one said that. Did this one respond about the show? And I look at it. And, you know, stupid little things. But I refuse to get it sent to my cell phone, because then I think that's where everybody becomes addicted to it.
Yeah.
I go back like, and
like crackberries, you know.
Yeah.
I have a crackberry, and I really understand why they call it a crackberry. You can't stop looking at the stupid thing.
Yes. I have one, too. But that's why I don't do the – I mean, I never did text messaging either. And one of my friends is like, oh, Joanne, wait until you get a phone that has a nice little keyboard. You're going to be texting. I said, I don't think so. I said, if you want to talk to me, pick up the phone and talk to me. I'd rather do that. I can't sit here and type into the phone. And you know what? That's the only way my kid will talk to me, 16 years old. He'll text me from the other room and ask me what's for breakfast. I'm like, are you kidding? You know,
there's an emotional disconnect, though, with this generation of kids.
Yes.
That there's no FaceTime. They don't have to be accountable for anything that they email or text or Twitter. There's no looking somebody in the eyes and saying, I said this, I did this. There's a lack of accountability with all this stuff that makes me a little bit nervous. Like there's a developmental thing they're going to be lacking.
I agree, because it's kind of like you don't own up to it. I mean, you go back to, I mean, even back on Ellen, on the Ellen DeGeneres show, Taylor Swift was on there, and she said, Nick, whatever Jonas brother she was dating at the time, he broke up with me through a text message.
Yeah.
Okay, are you kidding me? That's what it kind of relates to. So, I mean, it's like, pick up the phone and do the right thing. I'd rather talk to people than sit and text all day.
Yeah, I know people, like I have an aunt who, after my uncle died, she would send out these long emails. And her emails were really, really interesting. She ended up moving to Seattle, and her emails were very, very interesting. But I thought, how come when I saw you and you lived here, you never talked to me like this? I never knew any of this stuff about you. It would have been really nice for you to communicate with me, your niece, and my brothers and sisters, and you know, and to have known you as this person, other than this person who feels so liberated, and she's typing out these emails, but there's an emotional disconnection there.
Absolutely.
I like the writing, but I don't know. I don't feel close to you because you write. I feel like it's a book that I've read. I don't feel close to the author just because I read his book.
Yeah, right.
You're supposed to be my aunt. You know.
Like, yeah, exactly. I agree. I mean, I scream at my son all the time, you know, because he does stuff like that. You know, instead of calling his father for his birthday, he'll send him a text message. I'm like, boy, pick up the phone and speak to the man that helped create you. Are you kidding me?
But you know what? I think it will balance. We all panic. Every time there's some change, we all panic about what it's going to do. And because, you know, it's like a balance beam, you know, or not a balance beam, like a teeter-totter that goes all the way to the bottom with the new weight. But then it ends up evening out. It does even out. The bad stuff happens first. Everybody, you know, everybody explodes with it. And then it balances, and people find their way back to a happy medium, which hopefully will be what happens. Because the alternative is that we're going to have this kind of dumbed-down youth, and I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, no, you're right. I have to just throw this in there because I just saw, and I can't remember the state, but there was a state where they did a texting championship, and this 15-year-old girl won $50,000 because she can text the fastest.
Wow.
So that's what, you know, instead of giving the kids $50,000 that won the spelling bee, they're giving it to the kids that can text.
Well, you know, speaking of the spelling bee, there was a funny cartoon. I don't know if it was in the Times or Newsweek. It might have been Newsweek. And it was this little girl standing in a spelling bee, and they asked her to, you know, spell later. And she spelled it L-8-R. And that's our future generation. That's,
exactly.
Because they do, they don't have to be responsible for grammar. I sound like such an old lady. I am such an old lady. When I was a little girl.
Yes, it's the mother in us, because I say the same thing. Can I tell you, my 16-year-old never learned how to write cursive through school. I mean, that was mandatory. You learned how to write cursive.
Yes.
He never, ever learned how to write. And I couldn't believe that. And I don't know why, you know, I mean, all these years just growing up, I never even realized that he didn't learn it. I mean, there was quite a few years when he was in school that I wasn't around for a lot of the schoolwork because, long story short, I was diagnosed with cancer when I was 32, and I was in chemo till I was 36 or whatever. So I wasn't around for a lot of it, but he never learned cursive. And I was like, are you kidding? But now my 8-year-old comes in every day. Mom, I learned how to do my T. Yes. I learned how to do my Y. And now he can write his name in cursive. I was like, now you need to teach your brother.
maybe they taught it to him, but it wasn't something he was comfortable with. And as soon as he wasn't required to do it anymore, he let it go.
I don't know. He can't even sign his name. He cannot sign his name. I don't think he ever really learned it. He swears he never did, and I've never seen him sign anything. When it's a required, because he's 16 now, he has to sign things. He just signs his two initials. He can't sign out his name unless it's in print. And he can't read cursive.
Really?
Yeah, he can't read it.
Okay, that's a little interesting.
Yeah, he cannot read cursive. This is courtesy of the schools in Florida, because that's, you know, where he spent the majority of, you know, his schooling. We just moved back to New York last year, and my little guy is doing cursive, but in Florida they didn't do that.
Yeah, I never really heard good things about the schools in Florida.
No, well, you know what? There's really not a lot of good things to say. We were in South Florida, and I had a lot of issues. A lot of issues down there with them. And
my sister lives in South Carolina. She says that about the schools in South Carolina.
Let's put it this way. When we moved here, my son, when we left Florida, he had a decent grade point average. But when we moved here, we had to, when I went to go register for him for school, they were like, wow, these grades that you got in Florida, they really don't count. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, well, we don't count these classes. He's going to have to take this again. He's going to have to take that again. He basically had to repeat the 9th grade in the 10th grade New York style.
Wow.
Because Florida was so far behind, I guess, what New York is doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, wow, we got totally off the game and had a big ass long conversation.
Because we had a conversation about real stuff. That's what I like to talk about, real stuff.
And that's fantastic. But I still got people wanting to talk to you. They're like, you got your hands up in the chat. I'm like, hello, Twitters and mommies. Let me take a couple more calls, and then I got to let her go. This is late for Beth. She's got an early job. I'm going to take one more caller here. Let's go to area code 412. Hi, who's this? 412.
Hey, hi, Julian.
Hi, who's this?
Hey, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes. Hi. Who's this?
Hey, it's Matthew Preston from Buzzworthy Radio. What's up, Joanne?
Oh, hey, Matt. How you doing? Say hi to Beth.
I'm doing good. I've been really good. And this is my first time ever calling into your show. And because Novell said that, you know, you had Beth Ehlers on, so I was like, I have to definitely call.
Oh, definitely. I'm glad you did. Say hi.
Hi.
Hi, Beth.
How are you?
I'm doing awesome, and I was totally following your conversation, and that was really cool. But my question to you, Beth, is I love Harley so much. Is there any possible way that she could possibly come back to the finale of Guiding Light?
I actually would really like to go back for the finale. It's not something that I've brought up. I've not been asked. It's not something that I've brought up to my producers. I don't know how ABC would feel about it. I mean, it's the last episode of a show, or the last two episodes of a show, whatever. I can't imagine they would be afraid of me getting stolen away.
True.
But nobody at Guiding Light has approached me at all. They may think that it's not a possibility. They may be still mad at me that I left. I'm sure that there's some hostility there about me leaving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you have to do. It's not personal.
Right.
It wasn't personal. Love you guys.
This is a decision, and that's it.
But I wouldn't be opposed to it in terms of, you know, I do have a contract with ABC, and I am contractually bound to be with them. And so it may be just legally, logistically, I would not be able to do it. But I don't personally or emotionally have a problem with it.
Very cool. Well, I hopefully, cross your fingers, because I know a lot of the Harley fans are just like, they want to see you back on. Just maybe just like a brief hello. I don't know.
Oh, my God. But how would I be on without Gus? I can't even. Ricky leaving. I know it's just, you've heard it before, but I just really, he told me, and I just never saw her on that show after that.
Right.
This is true. And you know what's actually really nice? Got off the phone with John Driscoll. So.
Oh, did you?
Totally hit me. Well,
how's he doing in L.A.? How's Young and the
Restless? He's good. He's actually living with, hopefully, maybe Joanne. You can talk to him tomorrow, because he's living with Billy Miller. They're roommates.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Billy is freaking good.
I
think he looks like Peter Bergman. I think they look like brothers.
Yeah. They do.
He's doing a great job over there. I saw him. That is a tough company to step into, and I thought he was doing a terrific job.
Wow. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking my call, and you are awesome, and Joanne, you're awesome too. So thank you.
Oh, thanks,
thank you,
Matt.
Very,
thank you.
Have a good night, and you know, I'm totally about you with Twitter. Like, Facebook is enough for me. It's like, because Facebook, Joanne, I mean, you're on Facebook, so you kind of know that,
yeah,
like,
I'm
it's
on Facebook.
it sort of already has that Twitter function, so it's like, why do you want to go double Twitter and tweet?
Because mm-hmm. You know how Americans are.
Right.
More!
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks, Matt.
Bye, Matt.
All right, bye-bye.
That's so funny, because Billy Miller is actually coming on my show tomorrow night.
We pass each other. He was on so briefly when I started, and he was a mm-hmm. ghost, and the poor guy, every time I'd see him, he'd have circles, and, you know.
I know.
I never got to really work with him, but I did turn the TV on when he went over Young and Restless, because I had been offered a contract over there, and so mm-hmm. I would tune in and go, what would it have been like if I had actually gone
right.
to Young and Restless instead of all my mm-hmm. children, you know.
Right.
What might have been.
Speaking of, I'm glad Matt called in, because he actually jolted my memory here. One of your former castmates sent me a message on Facebook when he found out you were going to be on the show and asked me to send his love, which is Brian Gaskell.
Oh.
So he told me to send his love to you and how amazing you are. I'm sorry?
What's Brian doing?
He's not really doing anything. I had spoken to him about coming on the show, and he was like, oh, no, I really don't have anything to promote. So I'm not really too sure if he's got any projects or anything in the works. He's kind of just laid low. He's a big Facebooker. He's always on Facebook, you know, just posting random things, nothing specific or work-related. So,
you know what I like about Facebook? The one thing I do like about Facebook, because, you know, people of my generation – we're all curious about what happened to that guy in high school who, that's what I like Facebook for.
That's what I like it for. I connected with people that I mean, I'm out of school now 22 years, and I've connected with people that I haven't seen in 22 years. So that's
what I
like about it.
Yeah, I don't have a Facebook account, but my brother's on Facebook, so everybody
mm-hmm.
gets to me through my brother, and
right.
every day on my little Crackberry is a thing from my brother saying, hey, this person said hi, and I'm like, oh, my God! You know, names from the past that I haven't thought of in 20 years.
Yeah, that's what I did, too. I couldn't believe it. I'm going to be 40 years old this year, and I'm like, God, my memory is that bad, because I didn't remember that person until the name came across. And some of the names come across, and I still don't know who they are.
I know.
But
I'm bad that
like,
way, too.
Yeah, my brother's like, how could you not remember this person? I'm like,
my
I
brother
just...
does the same thing. He yells at me.
Oh, my brother does it to me. I don't believe, how do you not know her? She was at our house every day. And I'm like, well, hello, I guess I must not have been there, because
well,
I don't
know
her.
There were five kids in my family, so people remember us more than I remember
exactly.
somebody who only had, like, a sister. You know, there were five of us.
Five
of course, everybody remembers us.
Yeah, there's five of us too. Everybody knew the Cubasacks. Are you kidding me? We were like the talk of Yonkers. Everybody knew us.
And my
parents
were still married, and a lot of people where I grew up had parents that were divorced. So my parents kind of adopted a lot of people into our family, and we were like that family. So everybody remembers us.
So
and also
we.
I was a child actor, so people kind of. You know, people remember me because I would leave to go do a movie with David Bowie or something, you know. And
right, right.
You know.
Well, we had politicians in the family, so everybody knew us. I mean, in Yonkers, New York, you know, the Kubasek name is just, like, infamous. I mean, we got streets named after us. We got a couple buildings.
No way!
Started. Yeah. I mean, it's just like that. My uncle was a councilman for years. My father owned three cab companies and a limo company. He had a propane gas station. It was just a big thing.
What's your family heritage? What is Cusack? What is that like?
Cusack is Czechoslovakian.
Oh, you're Czechoslovakian. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just very big down there. And a lot of people knew us, but, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of people I sure don't remember, but I still connected with them on Facebook, and I tell them to tell me stories if you know, because I'm sure something will trigger this old memory somewhere along the line, but...
There's a reunion coming up of people getting together from where I grew up, and I so want to go. I hope I get an opportunity to go because I just to see how we're all aging.
I
know. To go and see other girls who look as old as I look.
Oh, stop it. I mean, God, you could pass for your 20s. Are you kidding me? You're timeless, so I wouldn't even go that way with you.
The lighting at all my children is very kind, believe me.
Yeah, okay. No. No. You're a timeless old Hollywood type beauty, my girl.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm not the kind of girl who would do anything anyway, so, you know, it is what it is.
Right? Oh my God. So, let me get one more question into you. I know I'm stealing more time than I promised you. I hope you don't get mad at me and hold it against me. Where did it go? Playing Erna. Help me out here.
Oh, Erna Phillips.
Guys, yes. They wanted to know how that was for you, and did you feel a lot of pressure doing that?
I did feel a lot of pressure. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Like, I and I did their 70th anniversary show, and so we told the story of the development of daytime television, the development of soap operas. Erna Phillips, who in 1937. Started a radio show. She got her money, her backing from the mob because she was a woman, and how is she going to get a radio show on the air? You know, no bank's going to lend her money. She's a woman in 1937. And so her boyfriend, who was a mobster, lent her money, and she started her little radio program, and, you know, this was the birth of soap opera. And
mm-hmm.
When we did it, I was asked to play Erna. And, yeah, I felt pressure. And I, of course, because I'm so type A, OCD personality, I went and did all my research, and I had a luncheon with some actors who were still around who still might actually, you know, remember Erna Phillips, and tried to do the best job I could. But I felt definitely a responsibility to play her as true to life as she was, you know, play her with her good points and her bad points, and show her love, her affection for this medium that she was in for so long. You know, she mentored Agnes Nixon, so how funny that I'm on All My Children right now.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that was her girl. Agnes Nixon grew out of Erna Phillips.
Wow.
And so I was really proud to do that episode, and I just saw all my friends on the show doing characters that, you know, I'd never seen them do before, and everybody played that stylized period thing, and I just was so proud of everybody's work. I just thought it was a terrific episode.
Oh, good. All right. Well, you know what? I'm sorry for monopolizing the extra 20 minutes, but you're just so easy to talk to. It's just like, it's like sitting down talking to, you know, one of those old friends, especially when you have stuff in common. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so happy. It was a joy to do it.
I'm glad you had fun. I'm so excited. everybody is saying how much they loved you. You rocked. And Brandy said, oh, tell Beth she rocked as Erna. So, I mean, this is just a long time coming for the Stardust listeners for you to come on. And you got an open format to come back here anytime you want to dish it out anything.
Well, let's see how the summer goes, and hopefully – if this pans out, and it, you know, and she does end up with Michael, and, you know, that would be fun. Maybe Michael and I can come on together and talk about, you know, the Tad Taylor, hopefully successful
love
story.
Oh, absolutely. Mikey's a big guy here. He's been on, I think, like 4 times already. He comes back all the time. He's so cute, my buddy.
Yeah.
I would love that. Definitely love that. So one more thing.
Yes.
Would you mind doing a promo?
No, of course.
Hi, this is Beth Ellers on Stardish, you know, however you want to say it, and I'm recording, so whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Beth Ellers on Stardish.
Perfect. Beth, go get some sleep. Good night. I love you for coming on, and give everybody, all my children, my best, and the fans are saying good night, and thanks for chatting with us. They just love, love, love to hear you talk. You're so down to earth, and they just love you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for giving me a chance at all my children, and thanks for watching and believing in her. I know it was a tough start, but, you know, hopefully we're getting her on track.
Absolutely. All right, darling, have a great night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Anytime, anytime. The lovely Beth Ellers, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out to chat with us. And you guys, make sure you come back tomorrow night for Billy Miller at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday. Comedian Paul Ryan. Next week, we got Judge Lynn Toler coming to give some marital advice, money advice. Stardish got some big things coming up for the next couple weeks, so make sure you check out stardishradio.com for all the calendar updates. And until then, I will talk to you all later. Have a good night, everybody.
Hi, this is Julia Barr on Stardish Radio.
Hi, this is Katie McClain, and I'm on Stardish Radio.
This is Jill Larson on Stardish Radio. Tune in and stay tuned. You never know who will drop by.
Hey, this is Sydney Penny, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Eileen Christian, and you're listening to Stardish Radio.
This is Forbes Myers, and you're listening to Stardish Radio.
Hi, this is David Fumero, and you're listening to Stardish Radio.
This is Jill Larson on Stardish Radio. Tune in and stay tuned. You never know who will drop by.
Aww.